From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, tell us about the topics we have.
Yes. When you bring your bags into the grocery store, Tom, I know you bring your bags into the grocery store every time you go shopping, right?
I use their paper bags.
But if you don't, if you bring your own bags, what sort of food is in that bags versus people who bring in, do not bring in their paper bags?
Oh, I think I can guess, but I'll wait.
Bringing in your bags or not, does it affect your food choices and statins? New article is looking at the wide use of statins. Are they justified or not? Are we treating too many people or not with statins?
Mm-hmm. And our recipe?
Gazpacho. It's a wonderful recipe from the vault. Zorba's gazpacho, great any time of year.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's welcome our first caller, a listener with us in Depew, New York. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. I'm a male, 78 years old, in very good health. Mm-hmm. All my tests are perfect, but I take a little thyroid. Now, my forearms, the skin in my forearms is very thin. If I bump a doorway or something with my forearm, immediately the skin tears and I bleed profusely.
Ooh.
And then I have a sore that has to heal. It takes a few days to heal, or a week or two sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is only on your forearms?
Yes, mostly my forearms. Yeah.
Uh-huh. A couple other questions. You take an aspirin every day?
No.
Okay, so the only thing you take is thyroid.
Yes, a little thyroid.
Nothing else. Nothing for blood pressure.
No.
Nothing for cholesterol.
No. I take some glucosamine for my prevent joint problems.
But nothing else.
Ride a bicycle 5,000 miles a year.
5,000 miles a year?
Go away.
Yeah. No kidding.
No, come on.
We're a club and we ride fast.
You know something? This is one fit person. That's exactly it. This is one fit
no
person.
Kidding.
You are a paradigm for it. Okay, a few things about your skin. First of all, I mentioned that about aspirin because aspirin is a common thing people take. It makes it a little bit more difficult when you get older to heal because aspirin produces more bleeding. But the issue is as we get older, we lose the subcutaneous fat. That's the fat below the skin. We lose that. That's why, among other things, our faces get more sunken because we just don't have that chubby fat that we have when we are infants. Our skin naturally becomes thinner. It loses the elasticity. You don't have the bounce of the subcutaneous fat. And what happens is your skin actually becomes thinner and doesn't have elasticity. So what can you do? Well, first of all, there's nothing I can do to change your skin. However, if you're looking at certain times that you're doing things, you can, in all seriousness, if you wear a shirt, a long sleeve shirt, gets the bulk of the pressing when you're actually bumping into things. If you notice, most of the times when you're bleeding, you don't have a shirt on, right?
Correct.
You've got a T-shirt on. And that's because you may be bumping around, but the shirt is actually taking some of that energy away. So a simple way is long sleeve shirts when you're doing something that you're likely to injure yourself. Now, let's say you're working around the house or you're doing something else and you go, I know I'm going to go take a walk in the woods. You wear a light, if it's warm outside, but you wear a light long sleeve shirt and you're less likely to get bruised. And that's probably the most important thing you can do. The other thing you can do is you can put a cream on your skin. There's one called Aquaphor, Aquaphor, I think is how you spell it. And Eucerin is another one. And these are creams that you put on the skin that once again put a protective layer on top of the skin.
How about Cetaphil?
That would be okay, too. Cetaphil is another one that's excellent. And they will also work. But the real trick is a long-sleeve shirt because that will take the brunt of the injury. And the other trick is go like Ponce de Leon and try to find the secret of longevity.
Well, my son recommended testosterone gel to be...
No, it's not going to do anything. Don't spend your money on testosterone gel. It won't do anything. You know, there's a lot of advertisements for men for testosterone, and most of it is gimmicky, done by drug companies trying to get men to take testosterone when they don't need it. And there is no testosterone gel that will do it. No. Just protect it with a long sleeve shirt and use the cream. And keep on biking. Don't stop what you're doing.
Annual checkup, the doctor says, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. Yep. It's working. It's working. Congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yep. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. 800-462-7413 is the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, a listener joins in from Deerfield, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. How can we help?
Well, I have a pretty severe panic anxiety disorder. It kind of comes and goes in waves. This last one has been for about 8 or 9 months, and I was on a lot of different benzodiazepines, and I'm just really tired of it. And so I was wondering if taking valerian root tincture can help in the same way that a benzodiazepine would, and if I do take that, but I need to take a benzodiazepine one day, if that's still safe to do.
Well, first of all, let's look. When did your panic attacks first start?
Well, I had my first one ever when I was 10 years old.
Okay.
And then didn't have one for many years. And then a few years ago, I had a panic attack that lasted for about 2 days, two full days.
Yeah, they're awful, aren't they? They're just terrible.
They're terrifying.
Yeah.
And then it stopped, and then I went through a period of about 3 months, about a year and a half ago that I had it, and then it started up again last September, I would say, and that's just been ongoing. So.
Yeah, okay. That's your baby in the background, right?
Oh, yeah.
How old?
He is almost 18 months now.
18 months. It's just a wonderful sound. Panic attacks are awful. I had a panic attack one time when I was in college. It was induced by youthful exploration. Let's just say that.
You want to expand on that a little bit?
No.
We want all the details.
It's not. It's one of the shows. Who was the guy? Who was the talk show guy? Jerry Springer. This is not the Jerry Springer talk show. That's not the Jerry Springer public radio show. But so I know what you're talking about. They're just awful. And before we go into the non-drug way, have you ever been on an antidepressant?
I was when I was about 13, but it was for depression and not.
Well, I have to tell you, low-dose antidepressants are a tremendously good treatment for panic attacks. You take them every day. They're much better than benzodiazepines. The benzos are sort of like when you get them, you take them, but they have side effects. They have habituation side effects. As you know, they make you sleepy. Sometimes you can't drive a car. Those I use for, as they say, as the alarm when you have to do something. But I have a number of patients who are low dose, Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, even the older ones called the tricyclics, such as nortriptyline, can do a tremendous amount of cutting those panic attacks down by 80% to 90%. And that would be my first, second, and third recommendation because they work and you haven't tried them. So that's the first thing. And I want to go back to a second. Who's giving you the benzos?
My primary doctor.
Mm-hmm. And has your primary care doctor ever talked about antidepressants?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I just really hate taking any medicine.
Oh,
so
I understand.
I've been really reluctant with that.
So one option that I tell people is, look, if you're having a flare of panic attacks, let's try to get them under control with a low-dose antidepressant. Give it a 3 to 6 month trial. Get them under control, and then gradually wean off of that and see how you do. I don't think valerian root or any of the other drugs that are used to, or any other the supplements used to treat depression have really been shown to be useful in panic attacks. Now, there are some things like for cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, that actually can be very, very helpful for people with panic attacks. That's one way to go. And talk to your family doc about somebody who does cognitive behavioral therapy. That's what it's called, CBT. The other thing that can be very useful is mindfulness therapy. And mindfulness therapy actually can just be yoga or meditation. And that can be very, very useful also for panic attacks. So those are non-drug ways. But as a mother with a young child, time turns out obviously to be you've got a short amount of time to do things because you're taking care of your kid.
Right.
So does that help at all?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Good luck.
Thank you.
And good luck with your baby.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sure, we appreciate the call. Thank you very much. 800-462-7413.
I love it when we get calls and we hear a little squeak in the background and then we know it's just a little baby.
You have a special interest in
absolutely,
that right now,
absolutely, because I have my first grandchild. Hooray, hooray, hooray. She's now 7 weeks old.
Yeah. Is she a good-looking baby?
Oh, my God. She is the most beautiful baby in the world ever, ever, ever.
800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, you say that it depends on what type of bag you take into the grocery store as to what I'm going to put in that bag?
Let's go back.
Yeah. You know,
there are a number of cities in this country that are outlawing plastic bags. Why? Because they're bad for the environment, right?
Yeah.
They stay there for 10 million years. They fly all over the place. They're ugly. They're disgusting. They're terrible.
Right.
So we're not talking about paper bags. And keep in mind, plastic bags came from not using trees for paper bags. Nonetheless, that turns out to be an issue. So people, I'm one of those included, will often bring reusable bags into the store.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you it depends on that bag as to what you put in the bag.
Well, it's very interesting. So they did some interesting studies, and they looked at, loyalty cards. You know, when you go into many grocery stores, you put a number in, and it says, what's your loyalty card, and you get points. But they keep track of a number of things. And they looked at people who were using getting plastic bags from the grocery store versus bringing their reusable bag into the store
to see what was in the bag.
Then
the people with the reusable bags will be putting healthier food into
those bags. It's very interesting. In one part, that's true. Many of the people with reusable bags are more likely to use organic. They're more likely to put organic food. But they're also more likely to put junk food in their bag, too. So in other words, they put in more, they're more likely to have fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, and organic food, but they're more likely to buy chocolate chip cookies and Twinkies and other things to put in their bags. In other words, they're more likely to have junk in their bags also.
Yes.
And this is not one study. These are several studies that have looked at that.
Why in the world would this be?
Well, let's do a little analysis. This is a non-scientific analysis, but here it is. You feel good.
Yeah.
You go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
You feel like you're a good person for the environment.
That's right.
Because you're better
right.
for the environment.
That person in front of me is using plastic bags.
They're bad.
They're
more likely to get frozen pizza. But I'm using that stuff. I'm buying some organic food. I feel good about myself. And you know what? I'm going to give myself a treat because I just bought organic food. So I'm going to sneak in a Twinkie. Maybe it's not a real Twinkie. Maybe we're going to call it a Clif Bar, which is really not a Twinkie because it's got more protein and less sweet.
Then there's a certain, I guess, kind of logic there, but there's really research to show
there's research that actually shows it. However, there's one group of parents that does not seem to be affected by a bag. Once again, they're treating themselves, but there's one group of parents where it makes no difference. One group of people, parents. It doesn't matter if parents shop with a plastic bag or a reusable bag, their shopping habits turn out to be exactly the same.
Well, because they're buying food for their children?
They're buying food for their children, and the type of bag makes no difference. In other words, they may still buy treats for their children with good food, but it doesn't make a difference. So the next time, now we know that all public radio people bring reusable bags to the grocery store, right?
Yeah, except yours truly.
Except for those who forget the reusable bags at home. But we also know that if we look at the grocery store, and if they've got little, like, Wisconsin Public Radio tag, let's see what's actually in their cart, and I bet you there's more junk
food
along with the organic food. Eat organic, eat the junk. That's what happens.
800-462-7413. And back to the phones now, Zorba, with a listener in College Station, Texas. Hi.
Hello, Dr. Zorba and Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Give you a bit of background. I'm a 60-year-old man. I'm 6'1" and weigh 210 pounds. And over the last 2 years, I've put on about 20 pounds. So recently, I was in South Africa, where I go back to every year, and one of my friends spoke to me about the Banting diet, which he was on and swore that it was the best thing he'd ever done, which is, my understanding, it's a paleo-type diet with high protein, high fat, and low carb. And so my question was, what are the ramifications of using a Banting-type diet or paleo-type diet versus perhaps a Mediterranean-type diet, given my sort of background.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
do you know what a Banting diet is?
Well, Banting was an interesting guy. He was an undertaker. Undertaker turned nutritionist back in the 1800s. And by the way, he was the progenitor of another diet, which was actually, you know, ultimately became the Atkins diet. So he was the guy who came before the mutton and bacon diet. Yeah. That was later on. But Banting popularized a weight loss diet. He was a wealthy guy because only wealthy people could be fat in the 1830s, 1840s. Now people who are overweight are more likely to be poor in our society. But seriously, only wealthy people had enough calories. And he said refined sugars and carbohydrates are not good for us. Now, he didn't know that they were called carbohydrates. He basically said cookies and pastries, which he made, wasn't there. And he wrote a pamphlet which was called The Letter on Corpulence Addressed to the Public. And his emphasis was on this corpulence, avoiding sugar, avoiding carbohydrates, eating a more Mediterranean diet. But it's not really a Mediterranean diet. It's a Mediterranean diet that basically also emphasizes protein, more protein. And I think he really had something on that because, frankly, since we as a society got rid of fat and said there's too much fat in the diet, it's causing heart disease, we have become heavier and heavier and heavier. And I think he was right online years ago that we eat too many refined carbohydrates. And so his diet, which is sort of a Mediterranean diet plus protein, I think is just fine. I think you should follow it. I have to ask a question. How many meals a day do you have? Because his diet was 4 to 5 meals a day.
I normally eat 3 meals a day, but sometimes I skip lunch if I'm too busy at work, and then I just have a...
Well, I would not do that, because part of his diet, a major part of his diet was you're not fasting and you're eating throughout the day. And let me give a good example of what a lot of people do who are overweight. They'll eat from 6 o'clock in the evening to 10 o'clock in the evening. They go in and they have a big dinner, and then maybe they have half a dinner again, because after they have their dinner, they're hungry, and they go and they fill up their plate half as much. And then at 8 o'clock or so, they have another snack, which turns out to be quite a few, you know, quite a lot of calories, and they may have something at 10. And then they go to sleep at 10, and they don't have breakfast, and often they skip lunch. So they're actually fasting from 10 o'clock in the evening until 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock the next day.
And then pigging out.
And that's very, very common in people who are overweight. They then go, I'm really hungry. Why am I not losing weight? I have one meal a day. And you look at the calories, and the reason is they're eating 500 to 1,000 calories too much. So part of his diet is a minimum of 4 meals a day. So you have to do it. Now, a meal doesn't mean you're sitting down and having an entire meal, but you've got to have something that's balanced. So maybe a handful of nuts, that can be okay, you know, for your lunch. Have a handful of nuts and a container of yogurt. Takes you 5 minutes to eat that.
Okay. Well, actually, I do eat nuts during the day. When you ask me for a meal, I was thinking more of a sit-down.
No, it doesn't have to be sit-down. A handful of nuts, if you look at a solo cup, 4-ounce cup of nuts, that's about 300 calories. That's a meal.
Okay, that's great. Now, the concern that I had, though, was, you know, the higher fat content in some of these diets in terms of my cholesterol.
Sure.
Are there any patients for that?
Well, there's good fat and bad fat. So we know that good fat is the fat of fish. So we know that good fat, for instance, is salmon, sardines, herring, any kind of a fish. We know that. That's why, you know, people have been eating fish oil. We know the fat in nuts is good fat. You know, that is good fat. We know that beef tallow, in other words, the fat in red meat, is on the whole not good fat. So if you're going to have red meat, I still recommend that you have lean cuts of red meat and you stay away from fatty cuts of red meat. Or if you want that, you have smaller amounts and you eat the good fat. But we've moved, and of course, olive oil. We've moved away from the concept of fat is bad. Fat is satisfying, and it turns out that in judicious amounts, it's more than okay. It's actually good for us.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We
good
appreciate
luck.
The call. Good luck. Yeah, thanks so much. Before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's take a dive into the murky waters of medical quackery in our newest segment we call Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, let's talk about the UCLA football coaches from the 1950s and 60s, Ducky Drake and Tommy Prothrone.
That's right. That's right. These are great guys. Great guys. They had a winning football team, UCLA football team. And one of the things they chalked it up from was the fact that every single football player had to have 1 to 2 pounds of steak 1 to 2 hours before they hit the gridiron. The idea was, let's have a giant protein-filled, steak-filled meal because we need all that protein and fat in our body when we're actually
I think that was pretty widespread, too. I think that caught on. The football players, a lot of them did that.
It was actually widespread. It was the idea was, let's have protein. So they would have steak, they would have milk, they would have eggs, they would eat until they were completely full. The idea was that steak was really an important thing to have. And imagine, you've got a football player, you're sitting down for this nice, greasy, delicious fat steak-filled meal. Now, I ask you, if you have a 1 to 2 pound steak, and I'm sure you do that when you go out, right, Tom?
Yeah, I haven't had one in a long time.
Yeah, but you've never had a steak in a long time?
Right.
Well, sit down with a steak. At the end of a steak, do you really feel like going out? Well, of course, neither of us feel like playing football when we go out.
Yeah.
But it's really quackery that you need to have this high-protein meal.
Yeah, there's a certain logic because if you don't eat for a long period of time, you do get weak.
Well, that's the other thing. So what we have moved away from is the quack, quack, quackery of protein to maybe the quackery of carbohydrates. Now, basically, when we look at soccer players, they load up on carbs before they actually go up in the gridiron and do what they're doing. Mm-hmm. However, they load up on carbs the night before or the morning before.
Not right before
so
the
you
game.
Give your body a chance to digest and actually have them. But let's put the high protein before you go out and beat that team. Steak 1 hour before you go out into the annals of medical quackery.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this news segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or find us on Facebook.
Our recipe is coming up. You'll want to stick around for that. More of your calls, of course, at 800-462-7413. Some more of your emails, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number to call if you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, this recipe is so good, you put your name on it.
Yes, that's right, because I love gazpacho. It's a variation of other recipes of gazpacho, and I think it is fantastic. I've looked at Cook's Illustrated, my favorite go-to magazine, made some changes in their gazpacho, and so, yeah, you know. So, do you like gazpacho? It's not something. It's not something. Maybe you've never had good gazpacho. You like tomatoes?
Oh, well, yeah, I like tomatoes.
Do you like salad?
Yeah.
You like salad? You may have just never... Do you like tomato juice?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is something you may actually like.
All right.
It's very bright.
Let's
and it's
do
very
it.
Good. Okay. So start out with 2 pounds of red, nice red tomatoes chopped in a half-inch pieces.
2 pounds red tomatoes chopped into half-inch pieces.
Now, if you have a variation and you've got heirloom tomatoes and you've got green tomatoes, but they have to be ripe and you want to chop those in to make it a different color, excellent. That's, those things show up during, of course, the nice warm summer season.
Mm-hmm.
Two red onions, rather, not 2 pounds. It would be a lot. 2 red onions chopped. Chop them nice and fine. Don't mince them, but chop them.
Mm-hmm. 2 red onions.
1 green bell pepper chopped into quarter inch to half inch pieces. Nice and small pieces. Mm-hmm. I'd say quarter inch pieces.
A green bell pepper chopped into pieces.
Same thing with the red bell pepper chopped into quarter inch pieces.
Mm-hmm. Red bell pepper.
Cucumber. Now, with a cucumber, you want to seed the cucumber. So what you do is you take the cucumber and you get rid of all the seeds on the inside of the cucumber. Cut it lengthwise, and then chop it into quarter-inch pieces.
Mm-hmm.
2 to 3 cloves of garlic minced.
2 to 3 cloves of garlic minced.
4 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
4 big tea olive oil.
4 tablespoonfuls of red wine vinegar.
4 big tea red wine vinegar.
And now 4 cups of tomato juice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what you do. You take half the vegetables in the tomato juice.
Mm-hmm.
You put it in a food processor in a blender and blend them all together. So you're taking half the veggies and you're blending it together. And if using the cucumber, make sure that's the part with the skin off of it. And then fold in the remaining vegetables into that. Okay, so you've got some blended vegetables, some vegetables that have some bulk in them.
Mm-hmm.
Add the garlic, olive oil, and vinegar. Stir it around. Chill it at least for 3 to 4 hours. Overnight is even better. And bon appetit.
That sounds great.
And correct the salt. It's wonderful. Yeah. It's great. And I'll tell you something. During fresh season, when you've got lots of tomatoes mm-hmm. around and you're saying, gee, what can I do with these tomatoes? This is an idea. Now, I'm going to give a trick, something that you could actually use during the summer when it's warm and it's hot and you hear a doorbell ring and you open the door and all of a sudden there's a bag of zucchini.
I know you've talked about that before.
And you don't know where it came from because you look around, you go outside.
Because a neighbor wants to get rid of all that.
You start screaming, where did this come from? But no one answers. And you could actually take the zucchini, chop it up. I wouldn't blend it. It doesn't really taste good blended. And put some of the zucchini in here. Not too much, but you could use some of the zucchini, saving the rest for a spicy zucchini recipe. I just want to let you know.
This sounds
there's
great.
A benefit in the summer.
I'm going to get my wife to show me how to use the computer so I can get this recipe.
Excellent. You know what? And if you go to ZorbaPastor.org, I mean, you know, the net, I know it's new to you, Tom, but if you go to ZorbaPastor.org, you know something? You can look at your recipes. You can look at pictures of Tom and me. You can see our banter back and forth. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Or find us through Facebook. And don't forget, I tweet.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba, as does this listener, Zorba, in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
My son had developed a stomach virus. He was vomiting and he had diarrhea. We had gone to urgent care. He was dehydrated. He had IV fluids. I gave him medication. We did this a couple of times. And then after he was feeling better, he developed hiccups. They became so severe, they lasted at least 7 days, 24 hours.
Wow.
And there was a point where it would cut off his airway. He would have several hiccups in a row, and he wasn't able to catch his breath. And so we went to an endocrinologist who did a colonoscopy, an endoscopy, a CAT scan. And so they're thinking that it could be Crohn's disease.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, he's a young man. He's in his mid-20s and very healthy, never had any health issues before. And I was wondering what could cause hiccups so severe like this. And what would a treatment be, or if you could just help me understand.
Oh, sure. Well, hiccups are an irritation of a nerve called the phrenic nerve, and this is a nerve that sort of sits on top of the diaphragm. That's really where it is. And so a number of things, including inflammation in the stomach, can cause the nerve, which is on the other side of the diaphragm. I mean, the stomach is on the other side of the diaphragm and the nerve is on the stomach and it's nearby. And the theory is that that can actually cause hiccups. And as we know, little babies have hiccups after they eat. Often they will have hiccups and, you know, then it stops. When we're younger, we have more hiccups. When we get older, we don't, they tend to disappear. I'm not sure why, but intractable hiccups can produce a major problem. I mean, so he had hiccups for 7 days. When was this? When recently or?
Yes, it was. I would say within the last 2 weeks.
Uh-huh. So the hiccups at this point have stopped, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so at this point he doesn't have hiccups. That's good. So he's having a GI workup. He's had a colonoscopy and a gastroscopy. So the answer is we don't have a diagnosis yet. They're suspecting this and that, and the diagnosis is not secure if they're doing something of that nature. So let's go to why this happened. We don't know. We don't have any idea. We don't know the cause of Crohn's disease. We know that it can run in some families, but it also strikes without knowledge. Maybe it's a virus that causes it that actually, it's maybe an autoimmune type disease, so a virus hits us. I don't think anyone has the answer to it. It is common, more common than people think. A lot of people have diarrhea and discomfort and lots of problems in the GI tract. It usually affects the small intestine more than the large intestine, but can affect any part of the GI tract at all. So there's no answer to that. We don't have the answer. The real issue for your son is, he doesn't have any hiccups. Does he have other symptoms right now?
Actually, no. He's feeling much better.
Okay.
He's recovering from his virus or whatever that was. Mm-hmm. He no longer has the hiccups. So the real
issue for him is if he gets intractable hiccups again, first of all, the issue is, do they have a diagnosis? That may not be clear. And then if he has Crohn's disease and they're not sure and they recommend medicines and he's feeling good, I'd say, well, what are the pluses? What are the minuses? Why should I be on something? So on the whole, it may be we think it's Crohn's. This is what we may do. The real issue is there anything that's useful to stop the hiccups if they ever return? And that's the question, because there are a number of different medications. None of them work perfectly. They all can have side effects, and that's where you have to sit down with the gastroenterologist and say, what are the steps for hiccups if they occur? How can I step in? And that has yet to be answered.
I see. Well,
So we don't have a diagnosis. That's number one. You need it. We want to have it. And the diagnosis may be we don't know. That's an okay diagnosis. I wouldn't put him on something long term if he feels good and the hiccups have gone away. I mean, if it were my son, I certainly wouldn't do that. And C, I would say, okay, you tried a bunch of meds, the hiccups went away. What can't he use because he had retention in his bladder? What could he use if they come back? Should we start it quickly if he starts having hiccups? Those are ways to look at it for him and his doc.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. And Zorba, before we take a quick break, let's take a question from a listener named Adam. He writes, on a recent show, you briefly discussed a call about humane euthanasia being a practical choice for hopeless, end-of-life, painful conditions. Dr. Zorba seemed to infer that there were actual pills a person could take in order to have a peaceful, pain-free death, rather than endure an agonizing illness with no hope. How can there be such pills, given the recent cases of botched death penalty executions using, quoting, humane death drugs? If government drug experts can't locate pills to humanely euthanize criminals, then where do pills come from, Dr. Zorba, that you alluded to for hopeless sick people?
Well, first of all, just putting away the execution to the side for one second, because that becomes a very different issue. The pill combinations are, you can get them in the state of Oregon. You can't get them outside the state of Oregon. Seconal, which is an old-fashioned sleeping pill. And then the person takes it themselves. In other words, nobody else is giving it to them.
Right.
They go, they get the pill, they take it. You know, I have strong beliefs about this. If I want to kill myself and I want to get a gun, I can get a gun, and that's a terrible way to go. I should be able to take pills other than heroin, right?
Yeah.
You know, which is an awful death, to be able to kill myself if they're hopeless. But that's a cultural issue, and people have individual strong beliefs on that, and they should be able to structure with that. Now, let's go to death penalty.
Yeah.
That's a different type of death where they're given intravenous medications, and they want to induce death very, very quickly, and it's in somebody who is healthy. Not somebody who is sick. And so that's a different structure. It's a different biological organism. You're not dealing with somebody who is on death's door that you're giving medication to. You're dealing with somebody who has robust health. It affects them differently. Now, when you say the government, let's not forget the fact that these are not doctors, nurses, anesthesiologists. These are the prison system people who are then, quote, trained to actually give it. And they're not the ones who are, you know, they're not anesthesiologists who are actually giving it, because there is a proscription against causing death among physicians, and anesthesiologists don't do that.
They couldn't take whatever is in the pills and put it in some different form that could be
injected. I'm not an expert on the death penalty, so I'll stay away from that. However, moving back to what the real issue is, the real issue is these are pills that often cause it. And if not, you then wake up and you haven't died. In other words, if the pills don't work, you're back in a soporific state. I don't know what the success rate is with the pills. I haven't seen any studies that are done. I also know that if you look at this in Holland, where it's available, and in other places, then let's say you have 100 people who actually have the pills that they have prescribed for them. Very few actually take them. It's less than 10%. Yeah. In other words, most actually don't take the pills. They want them on the shelf in case they need them, but they don't actually use them.
Have an interesting question for us? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or find us on Facebook. And controversy sometimes really is good fodder for determining what we should do as a society and in medicine.
We have some interesting research to talk about. That's coming up next. More of your questions, of course. And another email coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. The number again is 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before our next call, a couple of studies with guidelines for wider use of statins?
Well, let's talk about where the guidelines came from and then what these new studies look at. So the guidelines came basically from the American Heart Association and a number of other associations, and they looked at statin use. Now, statins lower cholesterol, but they do more than lower cholesterol. They seem to stabilize the plaques that are in your bloodstream that are more likely to cause a clot, which will either cause a heart attack or a stroke. So there's something else about that stabilization. And with their theory, they recommend that instead of looking at some factors, what we should do is put in your age, your blood pressure into a formula, whether or not you smoke and so on. And then if the risk of your having a heart attack based on their best methods is greater than 7.5% over the next 10 years, in other words, greater than 7.5% in the next 10 years, you should be on a statin. Well, that then said, more and more people should be on statins. And basically, about 56 million Americans, based on the new guidelines, would now be on statins. So there's been a pushback. People said, wait a minute, there are too many people on statins. What are we doing to the drug companies? Now, these are now generic drugs, for the most part. There are a couple of statins that are not generic, but most of them are now generic and cheap. Well, these new studies, they're not huge studies, have seemed to prove what the older studies have shown, that indeed there will be a reduction in heart attacks if more and more people use statin based on the formula.
When I heard the report of this, the age 65 was mentioned, anybody up to 65. After 65, should you just stop the statins?
Not at all. Yeah, okay. Not at all. The guidelines were looking really at primary prevention. Primary prevention is you've never had a heart attack, you've not had a stroke, nothing has happened. And that's really been the issue all along. Will this keep people from ever getting a heart attack in the first place? That's what they've been trying to answer for 20 years. And the broad medical answer is yes. The real issue is this 7.5% magic number. Is that going to have too many people take it? Is it cost effective? What are we doing with our medical doctors?
There are some dangers. I have a friend who thinks that his leg was permanently damaged.
Well, there are dangers because statins can cause myopathies. They can cause they can definitely cause muscle weakness. It tends to disappear once you stop taking the statins. There's some issues with memory loss that occur with statins. But like any other drug that you take, you have to look at the dangers and the risks. And this study, again, confirms the fact that statins are useful, and they're more useful than we ever thought before. Wider use is recommended, but it's sitting down with your doctor on an individual basis, and you're making the decision for yourself.
800-462-7413, the number to call if you have a question for Zorba, as does this listener, Zorba, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi.
Hello. I'm 68 years old. For the past 2 years or so, I've had quite painfully arthritic thumbs, one more so than the other, but both of them really. My doctor has had me on two Aleves twice a day now for about a year. It seems to help the problem sometimes, but not always. And I'm just wondering if I should be concerned about side effects for that amount. Are there other things that you think I could be doing?
Uh-huh. How's your thumb?
Whenever I do any, range of motion things with it, it's quite painful.
Have you gone to physical therapy, by the way?
I have not done any for that. No, I have not.
I would first thing I would do is consider if you have thumb pain and it continues, is I'd go to PT, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
First of all, they'll give you exercises. One visit, they'll give you exercises. They'll look at your thumb. They'll look at the painful things that you're doing, and they try to determine what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. So I've got a question. Do you have a cell phone?
Yes.
Which hand do you use when you hold up your cell phone?
Right now I've been using my left. My right is more painful.
So the right is more painful. I discovered that a lot of my thumb pain, and I had an x-ray done afterwards, and I said, oh my gosh, look at my thumb. I've got significant arthritis. It was due to holding the cell phone. You know, I held the cell phone. I changed the way I held the cell phone. Now, it never occurred to me that would be an issue.
Those cell phones are no good.
That's it. See, Tom has always said, get rid of the cell phone. That's it. But when I think about it, it was a ritualized behavior that I was doing, like factory work, but it's with my cell phone, holding it up. And when I use my hands free or I use the cell phone in my other hand, my thumb doesn't bother me. I also discovered... So you've got to look at that. You've got to look. You type on a computer, right?
Yes.
Get a gel pad. Makes a big difference. What happens is you will rest your wrist differently on a gel pad when you have a gel pad underneath the computer. Helped my thumb. I'm giving him personal advice now. Use a mouse with your right hand. It's your right thumb. Is that
it's
correct?
Both thumbs.
It's both thumbs. Which thumb bothers you more?
The right.
The right. Okay. Do you have a mouse pad? Do you use a ball or a mouse pad?
A ball bearing
that you use.
The ball that's built into the bottom of the mouse itself.
The bottom of the mouse. Go to the store and look at the other type of pads. There are other things you can use. There are literally balls that you can use that swivel. They look like a rolling ball in a deodorant, you know, a ball bearing. There are other mice that you can hold in your pad that actually have a pad on the mouse, so you hold your wrist differently. There are huge numbers of designs because that's where a lot of wrist and thumb pain has. Use a regular telephone, I assume, too. Look at all of these different ways that you use your thumb and try to figure out which way you should change it. And that's the first thing you do even before you go to PT.
Okay.
Now, you asked about Aleve.
Yeah.
One Aleve twice a day or two Aleve twice a day, even better. I think long-term use can be useful. Now, remember, there are side effects. There are cardiovascular side effects that the FDA is requiring them to put that label on the anti-inflammatories. They're a small risk, but they're present. So it's something I always consider looking at. But I take Aleve all the time because I find it relieves my pain and I want quality of life.
Okay.
Okay, good luck with the mice.
All right.
I don't mean the mice in your house. Yeah. I mean the mice that you're actually
I love your show, by the way. That's just great.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
We appreciate it, and thank you so much for the call. And Zorba, before our next call, let's take an email question from a loyal listener named Lisa in Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
She writes, Dr. Pastor, could you please address the evidence for or against glucosamine in helping the joints? I'm active and especially enjoy running, but I know that just aging alone is taking a toll on my knees. If a supplement could potentially prolong my ability to run, it would be very much worth it. Thank you for your great show. I hope you will come back to Spokane again.
I did. I love going there. Spokane was great. I loved it. We biked all around the city. It was warm. It was sunny. It never gets cold in Spokane, Washington, right?
Right.
You know, you remember the days that you're there, and
of
my
course.
Days were great.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Madison in the summer. It's so different. Well, there's nothing been shown in glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate to actually limit arthritis. So, in other words, degenerative arthritis occurs. It occurs in steps. For some people, it occurs quickly. For some people, it's a little bit and stops. Do we know why? No. We know that injuries will tend to make it progress worse, and you're going to have more problems with injuries. But the long and the short of it is, I don't think there's any concrete evidence that it actually improves your joint. Now, there are some studies that show that people who take it have less pain. Are there a lot of studies? No. There are just a few studies that are out there. So I think from a pain point of view, you can do it. Now, they cannot say on the label, this will help pain. They can help. They can stay, keep your joint healthy, because that's what the feds allow them to say. So I think if you find it's worthwhile, if you feel better, if you feel like you can continue to run, taking the supplement, by all means, take it. But if you're looking for scientific evidence that shows it's going to keep your joints from getting worse, it's not there.
Have a question for Zorba? The good doc is always happy to help. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. And another call now, Zorba. We welcome a listener in Eagle River, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet. How can we help?
Well, at times if I'm having a dream and it's a bad dream, like maybe an intruder in the house or something, I will scream out loud.
Wow.
At times I've kicked, I've hit, and even one or two times I've even kind of launched myself off the bed to get away.
To get away. Those are awful dreams. I mean, we've all had nightmares. They're part of it. How long has this been going on?
It's been at least 10 or 12 years.
Well, these are, they're called parasomnias. And, you know, where you're sort of half awake, half asleep, and you know, you have these nightmares, because we all have nightmares, but you still have some control of your body, and you end up moving your body instead of just being in the nightmare and forgetting it. You know, you're actually in your body, and the amnesia often is not there. with the nightmare. Well, there are a couple ways to approach it. Let's look at the medical way and the non-medical way.
Okay.
You know, the medical way would be, well, you know, do you have sleep apnea? Is this causing it? Seeing a sleep specialist. Sometimes you'll actually have a sleep study done. That's the medical way. And then do we give something medically to help you? So do we give you a low-dose antidepressant at bedtime called trazodone to help you? But you got to take it every night, and you're sleeping okay otherwise. So do you do that? And for some people, I actually will do that if they have a flare. If they go, yeah, for the next few nights I've had these, I'll say take trazodone 50 milligrams at bedtime. It often will put you to sleep. You won't be bothered with it. Do it for a week and then quit, especially if they just come and go over a period of months, because most people do not want to take something every night. The other way is looking at the non-drug way of looking at it and having something that sort of relaxes you at nighttime that may help you sleep. The old-fashioned warm milk remedy before you go to sleep is remarkably good for helping some people get a good night's sleep. You know, taking a cup doesn't have to be a full glass. Warming up the milk, there's just something about it that helps it. The other way that some people actually use is they have a small amount of blackberry brandy. And once again, these are ways that people do it. You know, the medical community goes, well, blackberry brandy, alcohol isn't good before you go to sleep. But I'm not talking about a big glass. I'm talking about a nip. You know, a very small amount of blackberry brandy, or if you do as the Italians do, limoncello before you go to sleep. And these are just other ways that are non-drug ways of doing that. The final thing that I would recommend thinking about before you go to sleep is thinking about doing 5 minutes of mindfulness meditation. And you can go to a yoga class to know how to do it, but frankly, there are a number of apps that are on the market now on the phone that will give you mindfulness meditation. Mayo Clinic has a wonderful app for that. You get it on the phone, and it can go through a 5-minute visualization meditation before you go to sleep. And sometimes that'll just set up your mind in a non-drug way so that you don't have nightmares, because it's not the last thought before you go to sleep.
Okay.
Does that help?
That does help. Thank you so much.
Try those things and let us know what happens. We'd love to share it with other people who have parasomnias.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're
most welcome.
Appreciate
the call. Thank you. I used to do that 8-minute meditation. I got a book, 8-minute meditation, and they had like 5 or 6 or 7 different kinds of meditation.
Perfect.
And I used to do it. I've fallen away. Yeah. I'm going to get back to that.
You know what? It's a very
really
good idea.
You know something?
It's 8 minutes. And it's before you go to sleep.
Yeah.
And you're just setting your mind into a different
state
before you go to sleep. Everyone has 8 minutes before they go to sleep.
Yeah. And people, I think, are put off by meditation. I have to sit there for half an hour, an hour.
Right. No, that's exactly right.
A short period of time.
And as I said, this is a book that you have. It's not as if you have to dedicate a long period of time, but a short period of time can do it.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And before we sign off today, Zorba, let's read a few listener tips that have shown up recently in the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. The first comes from a loyal listener named Sharon in College Station, Texas. She writes, Dr. Pastor, My sister, my mom, and I all have restless leg syndrome. Please tell everyone with this condition that tonic water is a miracle drink to help with this. We all drink 8 ounces of it with some lime when it flares up, and it works every time. We love, love, love you and your show.
And, you know, that's an old remedy because tonic water contains quinine. Mm-hmm. We used to be able to buy quinine tablets in the U.S., and the Fed said that they were worthless, so you can't buy it. And I know people who buy it in Canada because they get it because they can't. I get quinine, and I have patients who are in Canada, and I said, you know, the feds can come to your house and take you away and put you in jail for getting illegal drugs from Canada, and we've decided that the risk of that actually happening in quinine is probably pretty minimal. Now, there's something else about tonic water, which I didn't realize, because my wife likes tonic water with and occasionally with gin. Not very often, but sometimes she'll have a gin and tonic. Mm-hmm. So we looked at tonic water is a contains calories. There is diet tonic water. Did you know that?
No.
I mean, you've had tonic water.
Yeah.
Do you think of it as sweet?
No.
No, it is. It's sweetened. It has calories. It's not a small number of calories at all. So if you're going to drink your tonic water, think about whether or not you want diet tonic water or regular tonic water. Or you might do the illegal thing of getting quinine from Canada. Good luck.
Is it diet tonic water just as bad as diet every other kind of
yes,
soft drink?
Yes, it is, Tom. Yes, it is.
The final tip comes from Susie in Smithfield, Utah, who writes, my leg cramps go away in 20 minutes if I take a 50-milligram zinc pill. I had read that if one takes calcium supplements and you got leg cramps, take zinc. I tried it, and it works. Thanks for the great show.
Keep it up. I think it's a great idea. It's a great idea. Anything that we can do, you know, these are things that in modern medicine does not have a quick remedy, and anything that is a non-pharmaceutical remedy is something we want to consider.
Have a helpful tip for Zorba? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week,
Stay
Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. Remember, Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0808Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.